in this little swap that actually can become a pretty big deal down the road, I think, for the Thunder's favor.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, a lot is happening, and you know, some of the trades that we talked about has came to the forefront, and that's always a great thing when you got a good pulse on things and you can make those type of predictions. I can't, but my man William Graves is excellent at that. And Nicholas Lane. My bad. I keep saying William for some reason.
Okay, all right. We pretty much called it to a T with the CJ McCollum trade yesterday.
Yep, we
came really close. You know, Sunday we discussed about who would you rather have, and the Pelicans said we would rather have CJ McCollum, and you and I obviously agreed on that statement on Sunday, and now we get to see McCollum and Brandon Ingram and Jonas Valanciunas together, which is pretty good. But then you throw in the wild card of Zion Williamson whenever we see him, whenever he comes back. And whenever he comes back, I feel like we already obviously made the assumption that I would rather pay a little bit more for CJ McCollum than what Lonzo Ball got in free agency for the Bulls. So obviously on the Rat Pack, we hope that we are the best NBA analysts here to give out this prediction of what we think would be a better fit. And, you know, we have criticized the Pelicans a lot on this show over the years, even back all the way to the DeMarcus Cousins trade that I bashed the Kings so bad on, and was a big, I thought it was a great trade for the Pelicans at that time. The Pelicans have done almost everything else to sabotage their entire organization since Boogie went out with his Achilles injury and Anthony Davis got traded. So now really all that's left of the Anthony Davis trade is some picks and Brandon Ingram, and that's it. Everybody else is kind of out of there. Lonzo Ball and now Josh Hart. So I think at the end of the day, the Pelicans got a lot better. I feel like they're a shoe-in for the play-in game, even without Zion playing a game this year so far. You know, if this works and if this meshes well, I think going into next season, the Pelicans can be, you know, a guaranteed playoff team. And if Zion steps it up and he shows up in shape and he gets more fit and he has this motivation to play well, then you could put the Pelicans as like a surprise team, like obviously we see that the Cavaliers are this year. So I think this could be a pretty big deal for the Pelicans. And for the first time in a while, I can say that they really did well in a trade.
Oh, yeah, they did, man. They did. And, you know, we've been talking about, the Pelicans for how long now? Since they drafted Zion, about, you know, getting them some help, getting them some guys, you know, in there that could take a little bit of the pressure off of him. We say that now, and Zion has yet to play at all, which was supposed to be just a minor foot procedure. Dude has been out for quite a bit now, so we don't even know if he's going to play this season.
It's still up in the air. I think it's got to be more about if he's fit or not, if he's able to get his wins and be able to go up and down the court, the way that an NBA player should, which right now he can't do that. So that's the big question. Like, can he be healthy? And then one, and then two, can he be fit? And I think number two is more of the question mark than number one at the moment, because I think he can be healthy faster than be fit is how I guess I'm wording this. But on the Portland side of things, you know, they get a good player in Josh Hart. Josh Hart is a terrific rebounder for his position.
Yeah,
I think he's a good winning basketball player. He makes tough plays. I think he's a good defender. He's improving as a shooter. In a smaller deal today, Portland moved on from Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Tomas Satoransky, who they got in the CJ McCollum trade. They picked up Joe Ingles, a second round pick, and a player that, you know, even I haven't heard of. So, essentially what the Blazers are doing, maybe they did it the wrong way in the how bad that Norman Powell and Covington trade was, is that once they're able to find a suitor for Eric Bledsoe, who they got in that Powell-Covington deal, they're trying to clear off as much cap space as humanly possible and as fast as they can in order to rebuild this roster around Damian Lillard. I don't think Portland has the capability of getting a Bradley Beal or James Harden type of player to come play for them. I think they have to trade or absorb it into cap space, like how I'm going to talk about a deal that might happen tomorrow, to where the Thunder are just sitting there waiting to take on Tobias Harris's contract to get extra assets to take that on. So the Blazers are looking at roughly 50 to 60 million in cap space going into next season, depending on what they're able to get with an Eric Bledsoe deal. Maybe they give Josh Hart a little bit of money. And Josh Hart's a nice little piece. I think Nurkic will have one more year left on his deal. So getting out of Nance, Covington, Powell, McCollum, Tony Snell, I mean, they got rid of a lot of players to get back, you know, players that are not really either on the team or they're not going to be playing, which Joe Ingles is out for the year. He tore his ACL. So, and Joe Ingles is an expiring contract. So I would say the Blazers are going to try, and they're going to try swing for the fences and see who they can pair with Damian Lillard. At the end of the day, I don't think there's going to be a lot out there for them unless they absorb a contract in a trade to take back salary for a player, a bigger name player. I just don't think they're going to get that, you know, lure Bradley Beal out of Washington to go to Portland. I don't see something like that happening. So Portland's going to have to either be creative with their cap space, or they're going to have to be creative in trades in order to take on a contract.
Yeah, I think it's interesting time here for the league itself, and just to see some action, and hopefully it result to, you know, good things on the court from either side. But definitely
I'll tell you, to wrap up the McCollum trade, is that I think the Pelicans won this trade for sure. Yeah, McCollum has two more years left on the deal, and he's owed almost $80 million, he's 65, maybe 65. And so that's going to be tough to see that. But I think the Blazers are losers in the deal, even though they shed salary and they got a pretty good pick out of it from the Pelicans. It's just more about, I don't have a lot of confidence that the Blazers are going to make the right moves with all this cap space that they're going to really spend their money on here. So I think that's why I think the Blazers are losers in the deal, because I don't have a lot of faith in their front office or a new GM, because they have an interim GM right now. So they don't even have a general manager. They just have an interim one. So to be honest with you, I don't see the Blazers doing this right. I mean, that's my prediction. I'm going to try to give more actual like statements on the show compared to a lot of maybe that I maybe have said that like that in the past and how I've spoken. And so I'm going to go out on a bold prediction and say I don't think the Blazers are going to spend their money correctly, and I think that it's not going to work out the way that they want it to. The next deal that happened yesterday, and that was a real shocker, was between the Sacramento Kings and the Indiana Pacers, where the Sacramento Kings received Domantas Sabonis, Justin Holiday, and Jeremy Lamb. And the Kings received, the Pacers received Tyrese Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Tristan Thompson in the second round pick, 2027 second round pick.
Okay.
I'm going to go on the Pacers side to start. For them to turn Caris LeVert into a first rounder, Rubio is an expiring contract, so you'll get that money off the books at the end of the year, plus a first rounder. You turn Sabonis, who one out of the two, you know, either Miles Turner or Sabonis, it was kind of written out there that either one of them were going to get traded. And, you know, on a stats perspective, I think you would be surprised that Sabonis was the one that got traded. But then you look at an on-court perspective and that they kept Miles Turner, you're going to notice that that's going to be the better move. And for the Pacers to have a second primary ball handler on top of Malcolm Brogdon with Tyrese Halliburton, who's only 21 years old, by the way, is absolutely a home run for the Pacers to be able to get a potential guy who can distribute at a high level to give it to a player like a Miles Turner who can knock down the three and defend at a very high level that Miles Turner can defend at. So that, I think, that even if they don't trade Buddy Hield's contract to somebody else, like they're trying to do, even though they just got him, even if they still just have to absorb Buddy Hield and he plays for them, they still win that trade 100% because of how good on court I feel Tyrese Halliburton is. On the Kings' perspective, I thought that De'Aaron Fox was the worst player out of him and Halliburton, where Halliburton could be like the hard no, like I'm not trading this guy.
Yeah.
Compared to De'Aaron Fox, where you're like, all right, convince me and maybe I'll give you De'Aaron Fox. Like, I think that's the difference because I don't see De'Aaron Fox making an all-star team. And you know what? Maybe Tyrese Halliburton doesn't make an all-star team too. But I think on an on-court perspective, it is night and day a big difference about how good Tyrese Halliburton is, I think, compared to De'Aaron Fox's athletic, you know, John Wall type of ability type game that I think De'Aaron Fox possesses. Early in his career, like John Wall was like early in his career, is how I've always kind of thought of De'Aaron Fox. So on a Kings perspective, they, you know, out of the four guards that they had, yeah, they had Buddy, they had Tyrese Halliburton, they have De'Aaron Fox, and they have Davion Mitchell, who they spent a lottery pick on Davion Mitchell. So all four of them are all different in what they're so good at. And to me, getting rid of Buddy Hield was always going to happen. It's just a matter of time. But keeping De'Aaron Fox and then Davion Mitchell together is kind of strange because to me, De'Aaron Fox's best ability is just running to the rim as fast as possible. His shooting's still off. It's okay, but he is an absolute freak at getting to the rim and how fast he is. But Davion Mitchell is a very good, and I mean very good, perimeter defender, but he's an undersized guard that needs a lot of work over a couple of years to improve his shot to make it more consistent. So, Derek, if you're running a team in the NBA in 2022 and your two guards, well, their main attributes are not distributing the basketball at elite level, what do you make of that?
I'm going to try to turn that into something to where I can at least get a guard that's going to be able to distribute the ball to properly run my system the way that I needed to run.
So the confusing thing to me here is, and this is the piece of the puzzle that I'm sure you can figure out too. So why can't you just trade De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, and Tristan Thompson to get back Sabonis and, you know, Justin Holiday, Jeremy Lamb, whatever? But why can't you trade De'Aaron Fox's contract and Buddy Hield's contract onto the Pacers, where they just got rid of LeVert, so they can afford those two contracts? So why wouldn't you just do that? You'd still have Sabonis, and then you would have a Tyrese Halliburton who his best attribute is passing the ball. So I think that is the head scratcher to me on the Kings' perspective, that why give up the guy who's the passer to keep a guy who's the athletic freak and to keep a guy who's the crazy defender that doesn't do a lot of other things very well yet? I mean, he can still develop. He can still turn into something different, and I agree with that. But right now, he's a rookie. And so that's what I think is the confusing part, to pair that with a Sabonis who's a very high usage player, needs the ball in his hands, constantly all the time. That's where I feel like it doesn't make a lot of sense. And Rashawn Holmes on the Kings is still a center on the Kings. So when you go from a Miles Turner Sabonis starting lineup that didn't work, now you go to Rashawn Holmes and Sabonis, that doesn't work either. So I really don't know what's going to happen here. The Kings need to trade Marvin Bagley yesterday, last week, last year, 2 years ago, not even draft the guy.
Yeah.
They need to get rid of him since not even, passing on him for Luka Doncic. So, passing Luka Doncic for him. So the fact that Marvin Bagley right now is not playing, he's not that good. He's only good at one thing, and that's score in the paint. He's a good rebounder, and that's about it. That's it. That's all he can do. And so I don't know what you could do with the guy. And now you have Rashawn Holmes, who is a worse version of Miles Turner, because Rashawn Holmes can't shoot threes. So to me, this Kings roster just gets more confusing. Things just don't add up. And at the end of the day, we don't know what the Kings are still yet. They want to keep Harrison Barnes because reportedly they want to make the play-in tournament. Since when is the play-in tournament, you're celebrating that as a success? Unless you get to the eighth seed and winning two games in the play-in tournament.
Yeah. Well, that's the everybody gets a trophy mindset right there. I mean, I'm not just trying to get into the playoffs, but I want to get as high as I can possibly get from a financial, standpoint. You want to get to that top spot. So I'm not celebrating the play-in game. I mean, it's okay in college. You know what I'm saying? It's okay in college, but on the professional level, nah. If you ain't, suited up from the jump, then, don't even get on the boat, because at the end of the day, you just gotta do what's best for the franchise, and I think that, you know, that's what they have to do.
And to me, the Kings are not doing that.
No,
they're making an allusion to their fans that, hey, we're trying. Hey, we just brought in this 2-time All-Star center, but at the end of the day, he's not the right All-Star player that you needed to go after. He's not the right. He was not the right guy. You know. So, I mean, if the Kings brought in Ben Simmons, which I know reports out there were like the Sixers weren't interested in what the Kings would offer, but it's like if they brought in Ben Simmons, I think the fan base can get more excited than a Domantas Sabonis is how I would look at it if I were a Kings fan. And maybe that's a shame because, you know, you can't trade Sabonis for Ben Simmons because Sabonis and Embiid doesn't work.
Nope.
So, you know, now they're kind of left with, you know, Fox, Sabonis, and a bunch of dudes right now. So it's kind of unfortunate if I were a Kings fan that that's where you're, you know, the saying goes, blow your load on, right? So, I would say, you know, maybe that's a disappointing thing. There is a lot of reports out there with the Sixers and the Brooklyn Nets about discussions back and forth about Harden. You know, you listen to Brian Windhorst, and Brian Windhorst said the deal is going to happen by tomorrow. But then you hear from Woj saying that the talks are kind of stalling. There's not really much going on here. As much as, yes, James Harden is on an expiring deal, but he's eligible for an extension on his contract. And, you know, the GM of the Sixers is Daryl Morey, and Daryl Morey is kind of like the lab monster when you read these these monster, like the Frankenstein magazines as a kid.
Yeah.
And you would think that James Harden is the guy in the box with the green water bubbling all around him and the you know, things attached to his head. That I think that's how I look at it. Like, you know, Daryl Morey is this crazy doctor, and he's unleashing James Harden. And so it's essentially like, when is the Sixers going to do this? And, you know, they got until tomorrow by, I believe, 3:00 Eastern to get it done. And, you know, at the end of the day, a deal can be in place. You got to send Ben Simmons plus what role players? They've already said Tyrese Maxey is off the table. We're not giving up Tyrese Maxey with Ben Simmons. All right, fine. Can we get Seth Curry and Matisse Thybulle instead? If you want to keep Maxey so bad. And to me, I look at it like this: if Brooklyn doesn't want to trade Harden, then stop with the discussions. But if Philly wants Harden so bad, what stops you from saying, well, we didn't trade for James Harden and we didn't get to the Eastern Conference Finals because we didn't want to give up Matisse Thybulle? You know, Derek, does that make any sense to you?
No, nah, not really. I mean, I don't know, you know, you brought Harden in to team up with KD and Kyrie to you know, win the championship and have your big three. Harden, for the most part, has been there this season. KD's been out the last month. And Kyrie is an away game player. So the one guy that's been in the lineup the most, you gonna trade him away? And what are you gonna get for him? Honestly, you're not gonna get the return that you might want. I mean, James Harden is still a high level player. That's not even a, you know, question about it.
100%. 100%.
So if you're a championship team, as an organization, you can't bite the bullet to see if you can make a run when you get all your horses back? I mean, because nobody you get is going to be, from an offensive standpoint, nobody that he gets is going to be able to do, what Harden can do on the offensive end. Nobody's going to.
Not at all.
You know what I'm saying? No team is going to give you their best player for a guy that's not going to be there long term.
And, you know, Harden and Embiid would actually work. I think they could actually work really well together. I think it could be a good match to see if it can work. I feel like that's a pretty good fit. Now, in order to probably make this deal work, they got to move Tobias Harris. And the number one team in the league that has the cap space and is just waiting for that call, that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. They still have a limited amount of cap space, even this season, still to use. So Tobias Harris has multiple years left on his deal, and his money is way expensive for who he is as a player. So if you're the Thunder, you want this James Harden deal to go down, because then you're going to get extra picks in order to take on Tobias Harris for the rest of his contract. It wouldn't be a bad fit. You know, Tobias Harris and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander were teammates for a year with the Clippers. To put them with Giddey and Lou Dort, that's a risky play-in team.
Yeah.
You know, Josh Giddey is, you know, I'll say this, Derek, I might rival in my successes on the show, but I will admit when I'm wrong. So far, I have gotten it wrong on Anthony Edwards, and I know I've bashed him on the show, but Anthony Edwards is way better than I ever thought he would.
Is that the kid from Minnesota?
He made a different leap this year than I expected him to do, and for that, I will admit that I am wrong on Anthony Edwards. The guy, instead of just being a freak athlete scorer, he's now becoming a much better outside shooter than last year. He's becoming a much better distributor than last year. And now all of a sudden you piece that together and he's only 20. Holy crap, you almost got a franchise player there.
Yeah.
And I'm wrong. And I'll totally admit that. And I have no problem admitting that. And also with Josh Giddey. When they drafted Josh Giddey, when I thought Jonathan Kuminga would have been the better pick for the Thunder there, they draft Josh Giddey. I'm like, I don't even know what you're getting out of this guy besides a really good passer who's not a good shooter, and I don't know how many minutes he can play. Now, all of a sudden, this dude's putting up 17-10 games with 7 assists. This guy's putting up really good numbers. He's a team player. He is grabbing boards at his position at a really high level for a point guard, shooting guard type player. And he is the dynamite freak passer. He's the Ricky Rubio passer skill level, but a couple inches taller. It's really impressive what Josh Giddey can do. So for me to now refer Josh Giddey as this guy's a piece, and it's turning out that him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think, can work together as your backcourt. And then you throw in one of my favorite players in the NBA, period, out of anybody in the league, and that is Luguentz Dort. I absolutely love everything about Luguentz Dort. And he went from undrafted bench player coming in as his bulldog defender like a Davion Mitchell or a Patrick Beverley, and now is all of a sudden, like, kind of when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's out with his ankle injury, which was a pretty bad one, and I don't think he's going to be back until after All-Star break, if we're lucky, he's like the number one option on offense for the Thunder. Now, that's not the greatest thing, because I don't think Dort's ready for that, but for him to go from the bubble season where he was just a bench player, an undrafted rookie, nobody knew who he was, to where he is at today is quite frankly, like, that's a freaking Rudy movie, in my opinion, of how, where the progression of Lukens Dort has been. And I think, and of course his name is awesome, and he just plays so hard. Like, Derek, I think you would really like him as a player too, to where I just love the story. I love the player. He's not a selfish individual. Teammates love him. Fans absolutely go nuts for him. It's just a great thing to see with OKC that, you know, you put Tobias there with Shea, you know, healthy Shea, Dort, and Giddey. That's not a bad team. And for where the Thunder were at when they traded Paul George to the Clippers to get that just absolute freaking bounty of a haul, and the Westbrook trade, to now they can get like a middle tier star player, which Tobias Harris I think is, and now all of a sudden they're not a bad team. Plus they got all those picks and cap space and future flexibility, so there's just a lot to like there. And to put, I think, a middle-tier star that is not a selfish type of player in, I would welcome it 100% and let James, let James Harden and Ben Simmons swap situations, and all is good in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's how I would look at it. James Harden getting traded, about a 55% chance happening tomorrow. I think it's more than 50-50 is where I would put it.
Yeah, and I don't – any movement on Simmons, anything?
Well, so far – There's nothing on the front of him playing for the Sixers.
Yeah.
When you have Harden just begging to get traded, he's been held out the last three games with hamstring tightness, and he's being held out for tomorrow's game. So, and tomorrow's a deadline. So you got to think that he's really pushing for this. I've read some things that he looks at the Brooklyn roster outside of KD and Kyrie, and he's just like, there's no talent here. There's no talent at all. And, you know, outside of Patty Mills, and I think their rookie Cam Thomas, Harden might be right. So if you look at it in that perspective, then Harden might be right to want to leave. Now, his chances for a title, his percentage might go down, because by the time playoffs hit, KD will be healthy, and Kyrie will at least be able to play the road playoff game. So you have that going for you. So compared to Embiid and maybe Seth Curry, maybe, and obviously Tyrese Maxey, if I was James Harden, I wouldn't want to ask for the trade, but he's really pushing it, and he was held out on purpose against the Celtics when they got blown out by almost 30 yesterday. And
that was terrible.
He was holding himself out of tomorrow's game, which is very interesting to see. So that's why I would say Harden has about a 55% chance that I think he will get traded.
Man, and a year and a half ago, we were talking about Houston getting rid of Harden and, going to Brooklyn to team up with, KD and Kyrie. And we figured, that would be a good fit. I don't know, maybe Harden is a, bad locker room person. I don't know, but for him to be such a good player, still could do some, you know, still is a very dangerous player offensively. We know what he is on defense. But, you know, in today's league, they don't play defense, so it doesn't matter. But that the guy can fill the basket up, and, you know, he keeps, you know, he keeps getting traded. I mean, the only trade that I would say probably wasn't on him was when he was traded out of OKC. You know, he was a young, lot younger player then, was more like a you know, reserve, you know, third option on the offensive end because you had KD. And at that point, you even had Russell Westbrook, who was a better player on the offensive end back then. And Harden was just kind of like that third guy. So, you know, maybe OKC didn't, you know, they didn't really realize what they had or what they was giving up. You know, at the time that they did, but they gave him up. Harden became a superstar in the league, and now he's just being traded. And I don't know, man. You know, you don't hear much about him in the media. He's very straightforward in the locker room with the reporters, and. But I never heard anything about him being a cancer, like a team cancer or anything like that. So it's just, you know, kind of like a head scratcher why this guy, you know, is being traded. So now for the second time in the last three seasons or four seasons, whatever it is, it's very odd for a guy his caliber.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable. I look at it as high usage, high volume player that the best type of players to put around him are shooters. So it's kind of like he's a center, but he's a point guard, if that makes any sense. Because most really good centers are high volume, high usage players. That if you kick it out to wide open guys,
yeah.
Then you're obviously going to get a wide open shot. So it's kind of like Harden commands that type of that type of play on the floor because he's so gifted offensively that when you surround him around good shooters, then I would say that it works with Harden. Now, if you put him within Embiid, that might be weird, and I think it could still work, but it might be weird because Harden hasn't played with an elite center like that, one. And two, I mean, Embiid's kind of like Harden in a way. He's a high-volume, high-usage guy, too. So I don't know how that would go, but Embiid can dominate a game on the inside, and Harden can dominate the game on the outside. So in that sense, you know, Harden can foul out of backcourt in a night if you tell him to, and B can foul out of front court. I mean, gosh, that's scary in itself. If they were able to keep Seth Curry, let's say the deal happened, but Philly is able to keep Seth Curry, that would be a huge deal. Like, I think you would rather sacrifice the defender, which is Matisse Thybulle, compared to the sniper shooter that is Seth Curry, because Seth Curry, I think, would go much better compared to a lockdown defender on the defensive end, where I think Harden and Embiid can really wreak havoc and get guys out of the game for fouls because they're so good at what they do. I want to see a trade happen as Carlton Cook likes to throw out there in our group chat. About, you know, chaos. I wouldn't mind it in this scenario. But it is weird for the capability that Harden has to be traded twice in less than 2 years and forcing his way out, not just being a casualty here. Like, he is the one being vocal wanting out in both situations.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you, you know, 100%, man. I just, you know, I just find it a little odd in that situation because you normally don't see, you know, players of his caliber, you know, get traded so often. Those are assets, and I guess it just ain't working out between, you know, between them. So, you know.
You know, but the last thing I want to bring up before I'm going to head out here is, you know, we talk a lot about Tom Thibodeau on this show, and there's just one more thing that this is just the reason why I just can't give it a rest with this coach. You know, the Knicks played Monday and Tuesday night. The Knicks played in Utah. RJ Barrett played 43 of 48 minutes. Two games before that against the Lakers last Saturday, he played 50 minutes in an overtime game. Okay, so last night, with a minute 30 left in the game, down 15 points to the Nuggets, while he played 43 minutes the night before, RJ Barrett sprains his ankle. Now, if you're down 15 points and your best young player contributor on your team, who is RJ Barrett, has played 34 minutes on a back-to-back, you know where I'm going with this here.
Yeah.
Take him out of the effing game. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yep.
What are you doing? You're a freaking moron coach. Don't ruin your freaking team. And he is. Like, Julius Randle wants out. I think Julius Randle wants out of the Knicks. I don't think it's going to happen at the deadline tomorrow. But these are the moves that, you know, most of the time players get traded when you don't realize that that's where they're going. So, you know, maybe you could have a curveball and a freaking nuclear bomb gets dropped on us that Julius Randle gets traded. You know, maybe it could happen, but Julius Randle does not look happy. They don't have a primary ball handler on that team anywhere. Yeah. Derrick Rose is hurt. Yep. Kemba Walker sucks. And this team is a disaster.
They made a big deal of you know, for those few games, handful of games that Kemba Walker was playing in, and you know, we haven't heard much from him since then, but
yeah, great things happen for Kemba Walker when everybody's out on COVID.
Yeah.
So to be honest with you, it's obviously fool's gold. But and this year, if you played fantasy basketball for the Rat Pack listeners, you know what I'm talking about how when everybody goes out on COVID, then all of a sudden this one player just goes absolutely bonkers every night because nobody else is out there and shoot the ball. So, you know, this Knicks team is a freaking disaster, and I just wanted to point it out. Down 15, minute 30 left on the road. The guy already played 45 minutes for you the game prior, and he's still out there, and he sprained his ankle. Just unbelievable stuff.
Like, yeah.
That is coaching malpractice, in my opinion.
Well, you know, he's you know, one of them old school. Well, you know, one of them old school coaches, he's got a certain system, a certain belief that he like to do, not realizing that, you know, you just kind of like running these guys into the ground. It's not really helping them. You know, he's going to continue to be who he is, and that is Mr. Ramrod. So
that's right. he's got two disciples of coaching, not in his coaching tree necessarily, but two other coaches in the league to kind of watch out for this that do the same thing that Thibodeau does, and that is Rick Carlisle in Indiana overplaying Malcolm Brogdon, and now he has an Achilles injury and re
re-aggravated it, and he's played one game in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And then you got Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse plays his starters just an unbelievable amount of minutes. I can't believe that those guys can even run up and down the floor. It's unbelievable that Nick Nurse does not give his players a rest. It's freaking ridiculous. And so I guess the theory for these guys is we're going to play our best players until their knees fall off. Like how does that ever work out? Like it just doesn't work out. Players need rest during the game.
Yep.
The other day, you know, the Raptors went on a double overtime game, and most of their starters averaged over 48 minutes that night. It's just egregious.
I agree with you there, man. I agree with you 100% there. You won't get anything out of me on that one.
If your bench sucks, then do something about it.
Yeah.
Not just sit there and say that your bench sucks. Freaking consolidate them and get one decent player. Sign a couple of guys and tell those guys to go to the G League and pick their nose on the bench. And then you actually might have 7 or 8 guys that can actually do something compared to 5 guys and then 7 guys that can't do anything. So, sorry. it's just like front office malpractice, and you got the coach that just, you know, compounds it.
Yeah.
And then just grinding these guys into dust. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to see it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, you know, you know, with the deadline and everything we done discussed, it's going to make for an interesting tomorrow. See what happens. See if James Harden is moved. See if, you know, some of these other trades happen. It's going to be definitely, you know, something that I know you're going to be paying close attention to it. If something breaks, I know it's going to be in the, you know, Rat Pat Sports chat just as fast as you get the information. And, you know, we just at this point, I don't know, man. There's some teams that's got some decisions to make, and those decisions going to impact those franchises for, you know, some years. So
a couple of years, yeah, absolutely. And the reason why I put that picture in the group chat while we've been talking is it is James Harden in a store with a freaking track jacket of the Sixers on there. That is some wild stuff, man.
If that's a sign,
I don't know what else is.
Dude got like 20 bottles of hard liquor sitting on the counter, and it's, I mean,
wearing a Sixers jacket. Like what is real life right now? Like just get the freaking deal done. I don't care if it's 3 a.m. Eastern time. Just get the deal done. It's already gonna happen.
Yeah.
James Harden is up at that hour anyway. So what does it matter?
Yep.
I was making a stripper joke, by the way.
Three a.m.
that's why I said that. But anyway, well, yep, I'll be available in the group chat. I'll be working and checking Twitter quite a bit and seeing what happens. I think some minor deals will happen, and we'll see if the blockbuster will. And if the blockbuster happens, then all bets are off. It's a gunfight at that point. So I hope, you know, most trade deadlines, I want it to be a freaking crazy gunfight, because you want to talk about a lot of these trades and break them down. But we don't see what they mean. See what these teams are doing compared to teams who are just standing pat and doing nothing. Like it's That's boring. Come on, make some calls. Get on the phone. Have some drinks and get on the phone and, you know, three-way, four-way call and get a deal done, you know? So that was, I would say that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely what makes it exciting. Yeah, most definitely. Yep, so we'll see what happened tomorrow, man. It's a lot going on, you know, a lot of moving parts happening at the same time. So we will see what happens. I know you're gonna keep everybody posted in the chat group if anything comes down. And listeners, if anything comes down, you'll be one of the first to know, because we just got it like that. So, yeah. Anything else you would like to say, brother? I know you say you was getting ready to get out, but
watch out for the Lakers. If they decide to move Westbrook for Wall, that would be wild, way wild stuff to happen tomorrow. That, you know, are they going to move Horton Tucker and a pick to do something for this roster? And that's also something they got, I think, to watch for too. Like, will the Lakers do something? And I feel like that will be interesting to see. They don't have a lot of mobility, because we talked about that on Sunday, of what they can do. But they got a couple of moves out there of what they possibly could do. And I think that part will be something to watch for. And then just some teams that are, you know, lower in the standings. You know, the Magic, the Thunder. What are they going to, you know, the Pistons, like, you know, is the Pistons going to be Jeremy Grant? Like, there's also that part of it as well, where Jeremy Grant has expressed that he wants to be essentially on a bad team. He wants to be the guy that takes all the shots. So I think those are things to watch out for. Like, there's always a surprise trade. Like, you know, will Charlotte get a center that fits them? You know, I think the use of Nurkic is out there. They got a guy like PJ Washington they could trade. And I feel like Charlotte will be something to kind of look for. And, you know, earlier in the show, I admitted where I was wrong. And before I leave tonight, I am going to stand up on my podium, on my hill, on top of an airplane, and I am going to shout out that LaMelo Ball got his all-star selection, like I said he deserved.
Yep.
And I will say that till the end of time, that LaMelo Ball is a franchise all-star point guard. Pure and simple, done deal.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when they came out with the initial list, and a lot of people was, you know, up in arms because he wasn't on there. And
including me, I had pitchforks and fireballs ready to go to New York City to throw it up at the building,
hey,
for it.
I tell you what, you go there with those, and you'll look like just another person on the streets, bro. You wouldn't even,
that's right.
You wouldn't
that's
even right. Catch them off guard by doing something like that. They'll just be like, "Oh, he's."
I wouldn't even get arrested.
No, you're gonna have to do something and look out of place to get their attention over there.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I was definitely up in arms about that. But all is good. The commissioner actually had a say in who replaced some of the players. And, you know, to put LaMelo Ball in there, I mean, to me, shouldn't have even been a decision in the first place. But,
no.
Hey, what do I know? I'm just a guy that comes on the Rat Pack Sports Show. But I'll tell you this. Just as a funny thing to say, if Brooklyn called Charlotte tomorrow and said, "We'll give you James Harden, we need LaMelo Ball," I would hang up the phone, slam it in there, and then I would mail them anthrax or something. Like, just don't even talk to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'm on that. I'm on the same page with you. my brother. But yeah, I'm glad he did make it though. You definitely opened my eyes because you, as you know, when we first started talking about LaMelo, I wasn't a huge fan of him, and I didn't think he would do much at all. But you know, it goes to show you what hard work can do, and just being focused on you know, honing your craft in. And I think, you know, by him going opting out of college and going overseas for that year and getting a chance to play professionally over there did more for his game than a lot of people know.
It also helps when you grow 3 to 4 inches, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably.
That also helps.
Yeah. Because, I mean, before then, he was only like maybe 5'11", 6 feet. And then now you see him, he's up there now.
It's just, he's a three-level scorer. He is an elite passer. I think he gets in passing lanes and gets steals. I don't think he's a great defender or anything like that. He is a likable teammate. It's like he's a kid out there, how he plays. And, you know, watching him in person he's very effortless. And he can break down defenders so well off the dribble for his age. The guy can really do everything. Does he need to bulk up a little bit? Yeah, maybe. Does he need to have a better three-point shot to be more elite? Yeah, I would say that. I mean, like he can have some real off-night shooting. But, you know, obviously most of the time he's really good. I think he can lead a team to pass the first round in the playoffs. Obviously not this year, but at some point he can. And I just think the guy's a franchise player. There's everything pointing that there's nothing this kid can't do at a high level once his game is fully polished. And to me, I think the kid still has a lot of potential. He's not done. And he's already an all-star. I think just more great things are to come with him. And, you know, if he can make Miles Bridges from a bench player that even Derek probably didn't even know he was in the league a couple of years ago into a bona fide starter who's averaging almost 18 points a game, that's saying something. That's saying something that your ball distributing skills is that good. That you could put players in really good positions to make them a successful player.
Yep.
And that's how I look at it. And I think LaMelo has all of that.
Yeah, he does, man. And like last summer, no, it wasn't last summer, was it? Well, last spring, I was in North Carolina and got a chance to go and watch LaMelo live against the Celtics. They were playing at home against Boston, and he didn't play that game. I think he had the ankle issue or something going on, and he sat out a few games, and that was one of the games that he was out. But it was still a good game, and maybe next time I get a chance to stop in, he'll actually be playing.
Or if he's playing in Orlando one night, maybe you're able to go see him, or obviously in Miami, you're able to go see him sometime. But, you know, I saw him in Portland this year, and I couldn't be happier. He's everything that I could ask for in a player, and he's everything that I think a franchise would want in a player. This kid's only 20 years old. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And, he's just scratching the surface on what I think he can do, you know, down the road.
Yep, yep. Well, brother, with that being said, man, as always, pleasure having you on. And been busy, been a lot of NBA news coming up tomorrow, so I'm pretty sure we'll hear from you in the chat group. And, you know, Whenever, like I said, whenever you get time, brother, don't be a stranger. Always call in, because more of you and less of me is a good thing. So, you know, that being said, appreciate you calling in, brother, and we will catch you next time.
All right. Thank you, Derek.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Rat Pack Sports Show NBA Inside, Nicholas Lane. And like I said, always, that guy knows his stuff. And enjoy having him come on, because he could go on rants. You know, I go on my rants. He could go on rants for a really long time, and I just sit and listen, because that's what you're supposed to do sometimes. Just sit and listen. You learn some stuff that way. So, but he's doing good, and you know, glad to have him, you know, call into the show and give his synopsis on, you know, what's going on around the league. And if anything breaks tomorrow, we will let you guys know. We'll be the first ones on it. So, that's that. But we're now at the end of the show here, folks. So, we got to get out of here. And as always, we appreciate everybody who tuned in to listen. We appreciate everybody who downloads the podcast and checks us out on the other avenues as well. We'll have Boss Hall back next week. William Graves will be back in next week. We will be here on Saturday as well for our Breaking Bread podcast. I got a, you know, special guest, a good friend of mine, who's gonna come in and you know, talk a little bit of stuff. And you know, we'll Rat Pack Sports Show will be on here. Actually, no, Sunday's the Super Bowl. We won't be on the air Sunday. So we'll see you guys back on Wednesday of next week, and we'll get into the Super Bowl results and everything. So with that being said, we're going to get out of here, man. It's been real. Had fun tonight, and we'll see you guys on the flip side. I'm Debo. From everybody at the Rat Pack, Boss Hogg, William Graves, Nicholas Lane, Tara, and everybody else in the Rat Pack. Appreciate y'all tuning in. We will see you guys on the flip side. Everybody take care. We out of here, man. This is Rat Pack Sports Show.